From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Near Lake Merritt.
Alameda, California.
In the Excelsior neighborhood.
Cambridge, Massachusetts, but I grew up in Sonoma County.
Coming up, we'll take a look at a controversial proposition San Francisco voters will consider tomorrow about development on the waterfront.
And everywhere you look, you see a beautiful, revitalized waterfront, except right where we're standing, which is an ugly asphalt parking lot.
Then we'll head down to Palo Alto to visit the contentious site of a new affordable housing project for seniors.
So this is like putting people in Siberia. You know, there's nothing here unless you drive to it.
And we'll hear about a festival where artists tell stories of California.
Artists are thinkers. Artists are problem solvers. Artists are not necessarily somebody high up in an ivory tower.
Giving you perspective on Cross Currents. 25 years ago, the Ferry Building in San Francisco sounded like this. But after the Loma Prieta earthquake, elected officials reimagined the Embarcadero, and now it sounds more like this.
Three simple sabra hummus.
What was once a blighted, car-clogged eyesore is now a promenade of upscale restaurants, farmers markets, and a walkable Bay Trail. Except for one triangular block that has been a point of controversy for nearly a decade. Tomorrow, San Francisco voters will have a chance to weigh in on a long-disputed initiative that would bring multi-million dollar housing to that block, a 3.2-acre lot on the city's northeastern waterfront. 8 Washington Street was approved by City Hall last year and is now the subject of Propositions B and C. A yes vote for either means the developer can move forward. Supporters say it's exactly what the Bayfront needs. But opponents argue that it would be the first brick in a wall of high-rises on the waterfront, emblematic of how San Francisco's poor are being priced out by prosperity. KLW's Liz Pfeffer has more.
Mayor Ed Lee and former Mayor Gavin Newsom want to see the 8 Washington project happen. The Yes on B campaign even paid for a TV commercial saying so.
From the Exploratorium to the ballpark, our waterfront is experiencing a renaissance.
With Prop B, we could take the next step. Join parks, housing, and Bay conservation leaders.
Open up the waterfront. Vote Yes on B.
Because parks are better than parking lots.
It's a catchy phrase. But when it comes to a vision for the city's waterfront, another former mayor says it's misleading.
And the fact that the mayor and the Board of Supervisors have passed this multi-million dollar housing in condo form reflects the kind of influence that the 1% has with them.
Art Agnos was mayor from 1988 to 1992 and went on to work for years with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. I spoke with him at a meeting for opponents of Prop B.
I think the city's leadership has not been aggressive in reaching out to the kind of nonprofit housing developers who would be very happy, and I know there are several who would be very happy to build affordable housing on that site. Remember, that site is mostly public land.
Agnos is a significant figure in shaping what San Francisco looks like today. In fact, there's a monument at the Ferry Building commemorating his work to tear down the Embarcadero Freeway and open up the waterfront.
When I was mayor, we used public land to build affordable housing that today still offers a studio for less than $2,000 a month, something unheard of, except that we built it 20 years ago and it still is in place.
He says developments like 8 Washington are not what the city had in mind when it decided to reshape that area. I'm with PJ Johnston, and we're having a strange meta experience. We're in a building on San Francisco's Embarcadero, staring at a scale model of what could be San Francisco's Embarcadero in the future.
That's Jackson Street, which becomes a public thoroughfare. And it has a parklet and an open door cafe.
Johnston is the spokesman for Pacific Waterfront Partners, the developer that's looking to build 134 high-end units at the 8 Washington property. These plans have been bouncing around City Hall for nearly a decade. The model we're looking at is the result of millions of dollars and many revisions. And at this point, it's been approved by most city supervisors. Johnston says the public will benefit from the redevelopment.
Is that you would think, listening to the opponents, that there's some huge swath of parkland that's available to the public in the location now, and that's just not true. There is absolutely no publicly accessible open space now.
To see what he's talking about, we step away from the model and out into the real world.
Critical location. I mean, we're standing across from the Ferry Building. We're standing across from Sue Bierman Park. And everywhere you look, you see a beautiful, revitalized waterfront, except right where we're standing, which is an ugly asphalt parking lot.
Of course, that depends on how you see it. The public parking lot is under the jurisdiction of the city's Port Commission, but most of the site is owned by the Golden Gateway Center and used as walkways and a private gated tennis club. Johnston tells me that passing Prop B would make better use of that space and have other benefits.
We'll have two new public parks as well as enormous areas of open space that don't exist now. Ground floor cafes facing out onto the new parks and onto the Embarcadero.
And a condo complex that will max out at 12 stories tall. Not all of it will be that high. Some parts will actually be street level. Still, the area is only zoned for about 8 stories. If Prop B passes, it would allow the taller building as a special use district. Critics think that could set a bad precedent, but Johnston says
it's preposterous for a number of reasons. First of all, the next port lot to the north is at Broadway, and it's on the other side of Broadway. Anything on the north side of Broadway is governed by a historic district that limits heights to 40 feet. By its nature, it's a special use, which means special, not precedent setting.
It hasn't been decided exactly how much condos will sell for, but they'll be market rate, which in that area means at least a couple million. The project would also provide $11 million to build affordable housing somewhere else in the city. But why not just build it here? Johnston says,
look up and down the waterfront and tell me where affordable housing is being developed directly. It's not practical because the cost of the land and the cost of the infrastructure improvements are so high.
That point, of course, could be argued in practically any neighborhood in San Francisco. But some elected officials have decided to take a stand here by opposing Prop B.
We have a project on the ballot, Props B and C, that if it passes, it means that, you know, you're going to be creating not just housing for the rich, it's housing for the ultra-rich.
This is City Supervisor David Campos speaking at a housing town hall in Bernal Heights last week. He's one of just three supervisors to publicly oppose the project. He took on Prop B specifically because of what some people worry it means for San Francisco generally.
And this was the first time in a long time that the people of San Francisco, you know, came together, gathered signatures, and put it on the ballot. And that's why if we go to City Hall and they don't respond, we need to make sure that they know that we can always put things on the ballot to force the voters to get them to do the right thing.
8 Washington is far away from Bernal Heights, but it raises issues that are on people's minds all over the city, and that's not likely to change after tomorrow's vote. In San Francisco, I'm Liz Pfeffer for Cross Currents.
What do you think about Propositions B and C or about new housing in San Francisco? You can let us know by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106 and we'll try to get your perspective on the air. This is Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We're going to stick with tomorrow's ballot as we move down the peninsula to Palo Alto, which is ranked among the country's wealthiest cities. Yet, a recent study found that more than 20% of residents over 60 live near or below the poverty line. That makes competition stiff for the limited affordable housing options available there. Palo Alto Housing Corporation, a private affordable housing developer, is trying to fill part of this need with a new apartment complex specifically for low-income seniors. To make it work, the developer had to request a zoning change for the land where the housing complex will go. The change would allow them to build more units than would normally be allowed on the property, so long as the public would benefit. The city approved that change back in June, and that caused residents to call for a referendum. KALW's Audrey Dilling has that story.
Joe Hirsch is voting no tomorrow on Palo Alto's Measure D. He's showing me one of the reasons why. Here at the corner of Maybell and Klimo Avenues, where 60 proposed senior apartments will go if the measure passes. It's about 8 in the morning and...
You're seeing the beginning of the traffic jam that will go from now until approximately 9 o'clock. We have four neighborhood schools, elementary school, middle school, high school, and a private school. And about, 4,000 students come to the site every day.
School kids are riding by on bikes in packs like I haven't seen since E.T. They're rolling 4 and 5 deep, whizzing by a line of cars stacking up behind a stop sign. Hirsch and another opponent, Cheryl Lilienstein, say they're worried even more cars will join this line if housing gets built.
So it's a pretty terrible place already for traffic and safety for kids. And to put 60 senior units plus another 12 houses around it adds a whole lot more traffic to the situation that just has not been solved as it is.
Lilienstein and Hirsch don't think this is a good neighborhood for seniors. There's no grocery store within walking distance, no medical services.
So this is like putting people in Siberia. You know, there's nothing here unless you drive to it.
The neighborhood looks more like a suburb than Siberia. There are a lot of cars, but there's also a bus that stops about 5 blocks down the road. Beyond the driving impacts, though, opponents of the project just don't like the way it came about. For one thing, the city gave Palo Alto Housing Corporation a loan to pay for the housing project before it approved the zoning change. Then there's the corporation's plan for funding the rest of the building. It plans to offset the cost by selling a chunk of the land to another developer to build market-rate homes. That just doesn't sit well with Lilienstein.
It seems to lack integrity.
Palo Alto Housing Corporation, of course, thinks the project makes sense.
It's a very rare opportunity to find vacant land in Palo Alto.
Executive Director Candace Gonzalez says the scarcity of land makes it expensive.
So trying to build only one-bedroom senior affordable housing would not have been feasible.
The land was originally zoned for about 34 units. But under the city's planned community zoning, the corporation will build 60. 20 will go for $500 a month to extremely low-income seniors.
We need the other 40 units to balance out the income ranges so that the property can operate.
The project addresses a dire need for Palo Alto. According to a regional plan, the city needs to provide nearly 2,000 units of affordable housing, and it's falling short, especially for low and extremely low-income people. Palo Alto Housing Corporation has over 500 senior citizens on a housing wait list. Maria Heredia and her husband, Vicente Corona, have been on that list for 3 years. Right now, they're on their way to pick up their grandson from Addison Elementary School. They moved here from Spain 7 years ago to be closer to family, and they're paying almost $3,000 a month for a room near downtown.
Para nosotros es muy importante la familia, los hijos, los nietos.
Heredia says family is important to them, and being close together is a great benefit. If the new housing measure doesn't pass, she says she's not sure how much longer she and her husband can stay nearby. The Maybell Project's director, Candace Gonzalez, has answers for her opponents' concerns, like the traffic problem. She says an independent study found the project would have
an insignificant impact.
And lack of access to services? Gonzalez says,
that's ridiculous. No matter where you live in Palo Alto, you're very close to some of the best hospitals in the world.
And that loan from the city?
It comes from an affordable housing fund specifically for affordable housing only, and the loan documents had extensive safeguards requiring us to pay it back if we don't get approvals.
Back at the corner of Maybell and Klimo, Joe Hirsch says his concerns are not just about this particular project. They're about the precedent it could set.
Where almost any new development that comes along now is under what they call planned community zoning. And all the site regulations that have protected our community for decades, you wipe the slate clean and you start with what the city and the developer will negotiate.
Right now, there are at least two commercial property developers vying for planned community status around an intersection not too far from here. Ultimately, Cheryl Lilienstein thinks the city needs to stick to its long-established zoning plans.
The problem in Palo Alto right now is that there's a feeding frenzy, and developers are buying up every scrap of land because they know that the land here has been doing nothing but increase in value.
This is not unique to Palo Alto. All over the Bay Area, cities are trying to figure out how to be comfortable and affordable places to live for the people who are there now and those who will be there in the future. In Palo Alto, I'm Audrey Dilling for Cross Currents.
Measure D will be on the ballot tomorrow in Palo Alto. You can find more information about it at klw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. And if you have an opinion on affordable housing in the Bay Area, you can let us know by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan, and now it's time for Artery, cultural coverage that celebrates diversity. California has been called the most diverse state in the country. People come from across the world to make their homes here. People of color now make up about 60% of the state's population, and 112 languages are spoken in the Bay Area alone. The Califas Festival is a multidisciplinary arts celebration that seeks to tell some of the stories about this multifaceted state of ours. It's put on by the Triangle Lab, which is a collaboration between Intersection for the Arts in San Francisco and the California Shakespeare Theater in Orinda. KALW's Hannah Baba sat down with Rebecca Rodriguez of Intersection for the Arts to find out more.
So Califas is another name for California, and it's a name that, while maybe it's not familiar to everyone in California, is certainly familiar to a lot of people in California. It is rooted, I think, in Latin American sort of ways of thinking about Aslan and California and all of the people who are here. Mm-hmm. So when we say Califas, it's really a reference to that tradition, and also recognizing that there are many names by which to call California, and there are a lot of people who call California home.
So what kind of art should people expect to witness?
The festival kicked off on October 2nd with a gallery exhibition. And the exhibition is also inspired about the stories that make up California. And so you will see videos by California as a Place. You will see visual artwork by artists that are based in San Francisco and the Bay Area. Joel Daniel Phillips and the SF Postcard Project. Joan Osado did her project traveling up and down California, working with different communities, and so those are represented as well. So it's hyper-local, where we're talking about our neighborhood in San Francisco, but then we're also looking at California in general.
And performance is part of the festival too, right?
So Alleluia the Road is the first time that we're working with playwright Luis Alfaro. He has written a piece for the Triangle Lab for this project. And that's also a story about California and a journey from Southern California up to San Francisco through the Central Valley, up Highway 99.
Toledo, California, following that straight white line, 293 miles away, trying to go from what I am to who I was. Hallelujah!
and it's about love, it's about spirituality, it's about travel, and looking at, you know, who calls California home? Why do people leave? Why do people stay? Why do people choose this as our as the space in which we live?
What's the power of art, do you think, in telling these stories versus, you know, something else, a lecture? What is it about art that really helps tell stories like this? What do you think?
Well, I think that art has a really unique ability to bring people together. Maybe I'll share with you a story about a project that we recently did where we worked with a group called Sisters Rise. And they are a group of women who are organizing in SROs. Those are the single room occupancy hotels in San Francisco. So a group of women who are tenant organizers within the SROs are part of a project called Sisters Rise. We, Intersection for the Arts, worked with Sisters Rise to create stories about their lives. They made videos about their lives and their stories. One particular story was made by a woman. Her name is Brenda Washington, and she told the story of surviving cancer.
So as I get ready to go through the next phase of my treatment, which is chemotherapy, and I started June 4th, I'm going to lose my hair again and a little bit of my mind, but I know when it's over, I'll be able to get back to the life that I love and enjoy is cooking.
At an event we had recently, she told an audience that that workshop was one of the reasons that helped her get through her cancer treatments. She knew that she had to come to class to tell her story, and that helped her in her journey through the process. So those are the kinds of moments where you're like, oh my God, the power of storytelling and the power of being able to have, well, the having agency around your own experience and knowing that there are people who care about what you have to say, that has a lot of power in it.
Mm. Goosebumps. You collaborate with many organizations and individuals, professional artists and non-professional artists. So what's the importance of kind of having those non-professional artists on board for a project like this?
The truth is, artists are thinkers. Artists are problem solvers. Artists are not necessarily somebody high up in an ivory tower. Artists are activists. Artists are makers and creators. You and I are artists. Art can live and breathe in the world in ways that are not necessarily what we think about, you know, visual art on four walls in a gallery. Art can actually be a gardening project outside. Art can be, a collective beach cleanup. Art can be your dreams, your hopes. Art can be a place for sharing experiences about the world and really looking for solutions. Art can be beautiful. Art can be ugly. Art can be messy. But art belongs to all of us. And I think that all of us have the ability to tap into creative solutions and creative possibilities in our lives.
Ultimately, what do you want people to get out of this festival?
Ultimately, it's really about the power of storytelling and thinking about California as not a place for just the mighty or the winners. There are a lot of people here, and everybody has a story about how they came to California, why they stay in California, what makes California great, what doesn't make California great. There are a lot of things to talk about, and really this is just scratching the surface to say that storytelling and sharing our experiences with one another is a way to equalize and bring ourselves together so that we can start a conversation about what works, what doesn't, what our hopes are, what our fears are, and ultimately about the future of California.
That's Rebecca Rodriguez of Intersection for the Arts speaking with KALW's Hannah Baba. The Califas Festival runs through November 17th, and you can find out more at kalw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. thus concludes today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Jen Sheehan, Leela Day, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Nina Gensler-Debs, Liz Mack, Daphne Matsiraki, Mary Reese, Stephen Short, and Rachel Wong. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And today we say a fond farewell to Rebecca Burunji, who's a visiting reporter from Mama FM in Uganda, and she's been with us for the past few weeks. It has been an absolute delight to have you in our newsroom and our lives, Rebecca, and we will miss you. Also, thanks to you, KALW is homegrown, locally sourced, independent, commercial-free, listener-supported public radio.
I think it's hard to admit that I'm drunk, stumbling home after work in a funk, and belting a song that I hear.
That's the Plastic Arts you're hearing right now, but they could easily be called Kyle Turizi and Friends because he's the creative force behind the band. Reviews call his music achingly beautiful and poetic. You can judge for yourself at San Francisco's Bottom of the Hill on Thursday. Music starts at 7:30 p.m. For more information or to hear more local music, visit our website. It's kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.